Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin. Leading from your zone of genius means working in that sweet spot where your strengths and passions meet. Our special guest today is well-versed in the concept of the zone of genius. Katie Stoddart is the founder and CEO of the Focus Bee, a high-performance organization dedicated to helping people lead with greater alignment, purpose, and joy. From her humble beginnings in hydrographic engineering, she pivoted into the world of coaching, resilience, and conscious leadership. Today, she supports founders, entrepreneurs, and organizations around the world to sustain peak performance in their work lives. She's also an award-winning transformative coach, leadership facilitator, and the author of The Magic of Focus. Katie's also host of The Focus Bee Show, a top-ranked weekly podcast with over 300 episodes where she interviews international thought leaders and high performers. Katie's article, Leading from Your Zone of Genius, Understanding Where You and Your Teammates Excel Makes Less Work of Work, appears in the July 2025 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Coming to us today from Stockholm, Sweden, Katie Stoddart, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you so much, Greg. Thank you for having me.
I found the concept fascinating. So I was thinking, just to kick us off, Katie, can you explain what the zone of genius is and why does it matter?
Well, firstly, the concept of the zone of genius comes from the book The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. And I remember when I first heard about it, how it resonated with me. So the four different zones are the zone of incompetence, where you don't enjoy the work and you're not good at it. Then there's competence, you quite enjoy, quite good at it, but really at a low level. But when it really gets interesting is that there's the zone of excellence and the zone of genius. And the difference here isn't so much in terms of skills, so genius is a bit higher, but it's more in terms of passion. And what often happens is the excellence zone is also called the danger zone, because you're really good at it, you're very skilled, and it would be so easy for you to get stuck in that. People reward you for the sort of work you're doing, for the skills that you have. You're seen as quite diligent and good. And what happens is generally, if you're doing this at the beginning of your career, you quite enjoy it. It's quite good. It's a job. It's paid. You like it. And then as the years go by, 5 years, a decade, maybe longer, 2 decades, you start to realize that if you had all the time and money in the world, maybe you wouldn't be doing that job after all. And that's where typically the difference is with the zone of genius, because people who work in their zone of genius, typically, I said this a couple of weeks back, I said, oh, I have no intention of ever retiring. And people just thought that was very peculiar. But I think when you're in your zone of genius, you love your work so much that you wouldn't want to be doing anything else.
It's funny, we always talk about excellence, but we're saying here, excellence is not necessarily a good thing. So why do so many people tend to get stuck in excellence and never make it, or don't make it, or have a challenge of getting into that zone of genius?
That's a really great question. It's a question that I think many people ask themselves, like, why have I stayed stuck in a position that's well paid and I quite like, and I'm very good at, but I know isn't really my calling? And I think it's for several reasons. One of them is just out of habit. You're just there and it's not so uncomfortable and so painful that you really feel a need for change. And because the two levers of motivation are pain and pleasure, you think the pain of changing and trying something new actually on the moment often feels stronger than the pain of staying where you're at. But as the years add on, this slowly starts to change. And this is when people have midlife crises where they realize, oh, actually, they really do want to take that leap. And now that pain of staying in that same position, doing a job they don't really like, starts to become stronger and bigger than the pain of making that transition into something bigger. But maybe another reason also is people don't always know what their zone of genius is. They might think, I know I'm not meant to be doing what I'm doing now, but what else would I be doing? And it's having that courage also of exploring other options, looking into other options, and believing that it would be possible for them to have an entirely different career, which is exactly what I did when I shifted from being an engineer to being a coach. But then I was in my late 20s, so I was fortunate enough the pain of staying in that current position was strong enough at a young age, and it encouraged me to change careers. But it gets sometimes more complicated later on. We've been in that role for a longer amount of time, and then there are mortgages or children, and it can feel heavier and harder for people to make that transition.
When you said midlife crisis, all of a sudden I'm thinking to myself, midlife crisis may not necessarily be an age thing. It might be a realization the zone of excellence is not a place to be in.
Absolutely. I often say that moment when I realized, and I was 28, that I wanted to change, I often call it my midlife crisis, though afterwards I thought maybe I should call it quarter life crisis if I'm more ambitious with how long I'll live. And I thought, yes, it is actually that realization of lack of alignment. And I think people have it in different moments. And some people might stumble into their zone of genius when they're 18 and stay in it their whole lives. So that's also absolutely possible. But for many of us, we study something that we think we should be doing, or that's encouraged by our peers, or that our parents want to do, or just because we have no idea what else to do. Then we land a first job and we do it for a bit, might change a bit roles and positions, and then a couple of decades go by. And so many people don't initially have that alignment between the work that they're doing and what they're truly passionate about also.
It's interesting. Again, as we're speaking, I'm thinking often you hear the idea, the cliche, the concept, strive for excellence, not perfection. You're almost implying that you need to strive for genius rather than perfection. Are these two concepts interchangeable, or is that stretching it?
I think that's a really good way of putting it. Excellence is when you cross the T's and dots the I's and you're doing it all very well and consciously and diligently. But maybe your heart and soul isn't in it. Maybe that's the difference. So you can do it excellently and it meets all the standard and it looks good on the outside and the people you're working with are happy and it's good. You won't get fired. You're doing a great job. Maybe even get promoted. Genius is when the heart and soul kicks in. Genius is, it keeps you up at night. Genius is you're so passionate about it that you'll geek out and read books on the topic or listen to more podcasts about it or talk about it in your spare time and it gets your eyes animated. And so I think maybe the quality of the work delivered is similar in many ways to excellence, to someone who's doing the work and is very good at it, but it's got that extra bit of joy, enthusiasm, passion, heart, soul. And it also makes a person feel so much happier and so much more alive.
You just came alive right there. So your zone of genius is the zone of genius. So this is a perfect time. Tell us more about your personal story about what first drew you to this concept. How did it transform you? How did it transform your own career?
When I discovered this concept, it was after I'd made my switch, and I remember how it highlighted that difference. So I studied and qualified as a hydrographic engineer. So I was working on boats at sea, doing maps of the sea floor. It was quite an adventurous start of my career, and I did enjoy it for a few years. But I always knew, even when I qualified as an engineer, that that's not really what I wanted to do, because that's just not what I was that interested in. I was good at it and I studied very conscientiously and I got good grades and then I did well in my work, but it was never something I was super passionate about. As the years went on, I mean, I did this for 5 years, so approaching year 3 or 4, I thought, but what am I really going to do? Because this isn't something I want to do for forever. Then I explored different options, but long story short, I found coaching and then keynote speaking, which is also where Toastmasters comes in. And really those two sort of areas, coaching, training facilitation, and keynote speaking, there was just such a fit. I enjoyed it so much. I was so curious about it. I ordered all the books. I did the coaching degrees. I did multiple coaching courses. I've done, you know, the ICF pass. And then with the speaking, I went through the Toastmasters and honed my skills as a speaker, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But all this not to brag about the training I've done, but more to show that when you find that thing, you just love it and you get so hooked and so enthusiastic, and it doesn't feel like work to be doing that. Now, running your own company can feel like work. That's not something I'll hide or deny. But the actual activities of the coaching or the speaking or training never really feel to me like an effort or work. It's just something I find tremendous pleasure and joy in. That's sort of when I pivoted. So when I discovered coaching and then retrained and quit my career as an engineer and started my own company. And that was 8 years ago.
What you're doing now certainly isn't math and physics.
No, no, it's useful to understand math and physics. It's useful to have an engineering brain when you coach. It's true. It's a very different field.
Did you pass through those various zones you talked about?
Yes, I think when I was working as an engineer, I was probably in zone of excellence. I was doing a very good job and my team were happy and my colleagues, and I was even promoted to higher levels of project management and leading different teams. I enjoyed that part, the leading the team and the people aspect was obviously something I enjoyed back then too. And so that was really the zone of excellence. And then, of course, in your zone of genius, so when I started as a coach or as a speaker, it doesn't mean you're instantly a genius in it. So obviously then I needed to learn and train and improve on those skills. But there's a sort of instant match where you absolutely love it and you know somehow, A, you're willing to put in the effort to improve, but B, that it will pay off and you can actually become good at this. Because I remember this time on the boat reflecting on a colleague who's a real excellent engineer, problem solver, very technical, fantastic. And I remember thinking, I don't think I could ever be that good. And I wondered back then, why not? Because I learned, I took lots of notes, I applied myself, I wanted to do a good job. And I realized deep, deep down, I wasn't that interested. I wasn't that curious. I wasn't going to geek out for 4 hours to solve this mini bug on a software. And I thought, this is something you can't fake. You can put in a lot of hard work and effort to get to a very high level, but that extra 10% at the top, personally, I believe, maybe this is a personal conviction, only comes if you're really passionate. And this is actually confirmed if you think of grit, that Angela Duckworth wrote this book on grit. And she says the two pillars of grit are passion and perseverance. But she's literally saying that in order to have grit, you need to feel passionate. So this all sort of ties together, really.
I'm thinking about the zone of incompetence. Could that be a fallacy? It's low enjoyment, low skill. I love the guitar, but I couldn't play guitar to save my life. So am I in the zone of incompetence?
I also love the guitar. Ranking ourselves on absolutely everything we do, especially hobbies, isn't necessarily useful or productive. You know, as a high achiever myself, and I've also coached a lot of high achievers, we have a tendency to want to think like, am I even good at this? Is this my zone of incompetence? And I think when it comes to hobbies, maybe sometimes we should just say, I just like doing this for fun. Personally, I believe that we shouldn't say, this is my zone of competence or incompetence or excellence when it's something that we just do for fun. And I think it's maybe more relevant in the workspace to think, okay, what are some areas I'm just not competent at all? And maybe we want to grow and improve and get into competence or excellence or more and just improve those skills. But more often than not, how can we maybe eliminate them or delegate them or reduce? And classifying our work in those four areas and having to prioritize a bit more the zone of genius, thinking, how can I spend, you know, even 50% or 70% of my time in the zone of genius and 30% in excellence or 20 in excellence and 10 in competence. So for instance, in running my own company, I don't just do coaching, training and speaking all the time. Obviously prepare, for instance, the keynote speeches and the workshops, which is a different skill. And I also do a lot of marketing. Those are all different things. And I don't think, for instance, that marketing is particularly in my zone of genius. I have learned and trained at it because it's an important skill as a business owner. What I'm trying to say is even when you find your zone of genius and you work in it, you might not be 100% of the time and your energy always in the zone of genius. And that's also okay. That's also, you know, part of life and work. But if you have a bit more of it, you'll probably be more fulfilled and do a better job.
That makes sense. Tell us a little bit more about this danger zone.
So the excellence zone and the danger zone, they're the same thing. And the reason that it's also labeled the danger zone is because of the danger of getting stuck in it. So what I often recommend, if you want to create a change in your life, and this isn't just valid to go from excellence to genius, but it could also be building healthy habits, exercising, all of these things. If you want to create a change, one of the most powerful ways is to fast forward in your mind 5 years from now and see that nothing has changed and you're still, for instance, unhealthy or still stuck in a job you don't like or still living somewhere you don't like, whatever it is, and to actually really intensify the pain. And the reason I say this is because pain is a catalyst for transformation. So when you really feel that pain, then it's a lot easier to think, oh, wait, why am I still doing this? Flip it then around, fast forward 5 years from now and think of the totally opposite scenario. For instance, being super healthy or living somewhere you love or finally working in your zone of genius, especially if you have clarity on there. And have both of those, that strong pain if you don't take any action, and then that strong sort of joy and pleasure and ecstasy and enthusiasm of turning your whole life around. And we really want them to be intensified. And then when you come back to seeing your life right now, then you think, okay, what's the first step? What's the first action I can take? Whether it's working with a fitness trainer, if you want to, you know, get more fit, or it's looking at other places and looking at other options if you want to change where you live, or exploring your zone of genius or applying to a new job, but taking that initial step just after this visualization. Because the truth is, on a day-to-day basis, as humans, we're very strange. We're quite good at background. By background, I mean not very strong suffering. So sort of mild background pain that's sort of a long chronic suffering, unhappiness in the background. We can do this. I mean, people do it a whole lifetime. But we're not very good with acute pain. If we suddenly have this acute pain, then we're like, no, I can't stand this anymore. I must do change. And so when we do this visualization, we create this acute pain within our system, which means that then we're no longer willing to tolerate our current situation and we're actually going to take action.
Can you share perhaps an example of someone who went through this process?
Yes. So one of my clients, for example, she was a founder of a startup and running a startup, and she was doing everything. When I say everything, she had a team, but she was involved in a lot of different aspects. She was doing some marketing and some sales and some research and maybe even a bit of customer service. And also her days were packed with meetings. And as we worked together, several things she wanted to change to reduce the overwhelm and how she managed her time. One of them was, for instance, to have entire days without any meetings. But then another thing was to look, okay, but which of all of these activities you really love doing, you're really good at, and no one else can do? And in her case, it turned out to be the marketing aspect that she really, really enjoyed. She felt no one else could do it, and she was really good at. And then it was a matter of literally, in terms of tasks and days, prioritizing marketing over the other activities. So this meant hiring new people to do the other parts, reducing the workload in other areas, trusting her team members to do the work, and maybe just checking in with them regularly, but not actually being as involved, and prioritizing what she liked most and doing a lot more of the marketing. And then also, in her case, a lot more of the in-person events that she enjoyed. And yes, it was really just analyzing what were the activities that got the biggest results also for the business. But guess what? It tied to her zone of genius. Her zone of genius brought in the best results for the results for the company, which is no surprise there.
Sounds like she was in a position of authority. Now, for someone who is perhaps in a traditional job, how can they find a way to spend more time in their zone of genius without doing a complete career overhaul initially?
Yes. And I was also thinking when I said this originally, when I changed my whole career around, I was also thinking that was in my situation. But of course, someone's zone of genius could be already in their work, and there's no need for people to necessarily quit their job to do more painting because they love painting as a hobby, for instance. And so it's more a matter of looking in their current job, what are the activities they enjoy the most? And then it's being able to prove and show to their manager or their boss that A, they really enjoy those activities, but also that those are the ones where when they're doing them, they get the best results. Because that's often the case. When you work in your zone of genius, you often deliver better results. So it's sort of a win-win. The person is happier with their work, and then also the results and the performance is better. And that's when sort of convincing the superiors and the managers and showing sort of case proving, like, let's do 1 month where 2 days a week, I focus on this one activity I love, be it marketing or doing more sales or business development, whatever it is. And let's analyze afterwards to see how this impacts my role. It's being able to be proactive, to be a bit daring and courageous, to understand also what our strengths are, and to pinpoint and show the impact of investing more time and energy in those specific areas.
That's interesting. So if someone is trying, they're in their zone of excellence, they know they need to move into their zone of genius, they're a little bit stuck, they're not sure what to do, is there a first step? I know you mentioned before that there are steps that they can do, but what would you recommend the first thing that they might want to do?
Well, the very first thing is self-honesty. Accepting and looking the beast in the eye and saying, okay, I'm in this role or this position or this specific activities and something isn't quite right. And yeah, maybe it pays the bills. Maybe you like the team. Maybe there's other perks, but acknowledging that. So that's a very, very first step, having that self-honesty. Once you've done that, once you've been like, okay, I've admitted it, but fully admitted to yourself, other people too, but that's not as necessary. It's really fully admitting it to yourself, not hiding from it anymore. Very often we hide when we're not fully satisfied. We ignore, we hide, we distract ourselves, and that doesn't lead to any change. That self-honesty is really the first place. And once you do that, then it's starting to broaden the mind and broaden the options that are available, raising an awareness of what you enjoy doing, what you're good at in work, outside of work, trying different things, be curious, trying a new activity, a new course. We're really trying to open up all the neural pathways to see what are some activities that could be a good fit. Maybe you know already, great, then it's shorter, but maybe you have no idea. So then we want to like brainstorm a bit more, look at other alternatives, remember what we loved doing when we were children, and really tying all that together and leaving ourselves space for exploration. Because as we become adults, we're not as good as children with exploring, imagination, trying things that we're new at and we're not good at. We hate to fail. We're afraid of looking ridiculous. And this blocks the creative process of exploration. The truth is, if you have absolutely no idea, which will be the case for many people, what your zone of genius is, then how will you find out if you don't try stuff? You can picture in your mind, hey, maybe if I did, you know, teaching, I'd like it, or maybe I'd enjoy branding, but you won't know until you do it for a bit. That's why we need to try things. So I really invite people who are feeling stuck, once they've admitted it to themselves, to go on this phase of exploration and just try, ask people different things, their work, and see what lights up that spark. See what makes you curious. See what ignites that fire and makes you wonder like, oh, I really wonder what that would be like. Or I really want to hear more about this. And then follow that. Once you've admitted to yourself that there's a bit of a dissatisfaction and lack of alignment often, so alignment between what you value and what matters to you and what you're actually doing, when there's this lack of alignment and you've admitted it, allowing yourself to explore these options, to try new things, and then following the ones, the paths that attract you the most. And generally from there, at some point, and this doesn't have to be a very long process, within less than a year. Some people it might be 1 month, some people it might be a year. When I did this, I had no idea what I wanted to do after engineering. I decided that I was going to quit. I literally wrote a note, June 2017, I believe. I will quit my job at sea. I didn't know what I was going to do. And I just explored and tried different things. And I found coaching like sort of November, 5 months later. It really doesn't have to take that long once we allow ourselves to explore. And then when you do find what your zone of genius is, then you put a plan together and think, okay, is it going to be you start a side business? Is it going to be you can change your role in the organization? Is it just a matter of shifting a bit things around? But what often happens is before you've even found out what your zone of genius is, you put the obstacles in your mind and you think there's no way, I'm too old to change career, or it's too hard, or there's not enough financial stability, or there's nothing in my organization I could like doing. We put all these blockages, but we haven't even explored. The blockages just hold back our exploration and creativity and innovation and ideas. And so we want to let go of that, put it on the side, be like, yeah, I hear the... it might be challenging. I hear there might be some finance about, can we just put this to the side and look anyway? And then once we found what it is, brainstorming what could be possible. And yes, also, let's not be naive, not all of us can always work in our zone of genius. Some people, their zone of genius might be this extremely niche creative field that isn't well paid. Well, then maybe it's a side hobby that you do a bit more and that also brings joy and satisfaction in your life. It's just a matter of how can you have a bit more of this in your life, if possible, in your work, a higher sort of priority or one of the skills that you use the most, great. And if not, then maybe it's a side hobby and a side interest and you spend a lot of time on that. That's fine too.
That's excellent. I'm also thinking volunteering. There's so many organizations that need help is a great way to try something new with very little risk.
That's a great example. I was just thinking right now when I said this about it can be a side hobby. I have a friend of mine who coaches football teams and he, you know, his work job is something in IT and that was really his passion and he really enjoyed coaching the football team. This is a great example. Like you can do your work in IT or whatever you're doing and then do that on the side and maybe it does become a part-time job or a full-time job at one point, maybe it doesn't. But I think first to be fulfilled, first to have a sense of purpose and meaning, which so many of us are lacking, we need a bit of this zone of genius somewhere. Ideally in our jobs, if not on the side as a hobby, but somewhere we need this reconnection within ourselves with things we're passionate about that are really aligned, that make a difference and that add meaning to our lives.
Wow. Out of curiosity, how did Toastmasters help you with this process?
Yes, Toastmasters was actually a huge part of the process because when I first started my coaching business, I sort of happened to stumble upon Toastmasters a few months in. So I think I'd only had my coaching business for 4 or 5 months. I joined Toastmasters. And by then I thought, you know, coaching is the thing. It's a deal. That's what I love to do. Coaching is my thing. I joined, I think I was just curious and I thought, I guess I might be useful. I wasn't really quite sure. But then what happened was it sort of ignited a whole other path that was also the zone of genius. So sort of a double path because it is a very different skill to coaching. And I realized that I really, really enjoyed public speaking, that I found it quite challenging. But afterwards, it felt hugely rewarding that it was a way to impact 10 people, 100 people, 1,000 people in one go versus one-on-one coaching. And it was a great way to share things that I learned about that I was also passionate about so I could learn a lot of things. And it just opened up this whole other world. So after discovering my love for coaching, I sort of discovered speaking. And then I built the business as really two side-by-side strong pillars because though they can correlate, of course, some speaking engagements lead to coaching clients and maybe some coaching clients want me to come and speak in the organizations. But really, they are two different activities. Toastmasters was really the start of that. And it was just such a beautiful journey, learning to speak in public, building up also my confidence. It helped me to be more confident in general as a business owner and as a coach, getting better at sales. I mean, it really had a huge, huge impact on my life. That's why I was thrilled to write articles also for Toastmaster magazine or to talk today because it's on this podcast, because it really was a big part of my journey.
And we certainly appreciate you being here. And you certainly showed that if you can imagine a possibility, things can happen. And folks, if you are now inspired to discover or move your way into your zone of genius, I encourage you to share this episode with your friends and family and fellow Toastmasters. You can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere you get your podcasts. And don't forget to read Katie's article, Leading from Your Zone of Genius, Understanding Where You and Your Teammates Excel Makes Less Work of Work. That appears in the July 2025 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. And Katie, before we wrap up, can you share with our listeners where people can connect with you, learn more about your work, or follow your podcast?
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me today, Greg. So the best way to get in touch with me is LinkedIn. So Katie Stoddart on LinkedIn, Katie Stoddart, The Focus Bee. If you don't have LinkedIn, you can email me directly, katie@thefocusbee.com. My podcast is on YouTube and Spotify, The Focus Bee Show, where I interview also many leaders and high performers, and I share tools, tips, techniques, books that I've read to help you lead your life and your business, your career, from a place of alignment, purpose, and joy.
Katie Stoddart, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much.